Okay, I'm here today with Captain Ernest E. Teagle, T-E-A-G-L-E. Today's date is June 20th, 1985. We're at Mr. Teagle's home here on Booker Avenue in Oak Bay. And my name is Mark Hill. I'd like to find out a little bit about your personal background, where and when you were born.
I was born in Regina. 1918.
Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about your family background, what your father did.
Well, my father came over from the United States into Canada with Imperial Oil, and in his latter years was division manager for Alberta, then came to Vancouver. He was transferred to Vancouver and took over as president of Home Oil Distributors Limited, which at that time was a subsidiary of Imperial.
Yeah.
And I spent most of my younger life in Calgary, actually, mm-hmm. from the time I was about one to, well, from up to 1936.
Is that right?
I was in Calgary.
Yeah. Tell me a bit about your schooling background.
Well, actually, I came to school out here on the coast from Calgary in 32. I came out to university school, now called St. Michael's University School. And I was at the school from 32 to 36.
Is that right?
And then went on from there to University of British Columbia.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
After that.
During at St. Mike's at that time, I call it St. Mike's.
Don't be careful. Don't call it St. Mike's in front of the old university school boy.
At the university school, was there any cadet training?
Yes, there was. In my day, there was.
Yeah.
The 4 years I was there, we had a cadet corps,
mm-hmm.
The 170th. It was the oldest, I guess, the oldest cadet corps in Western Canada, certainly.
Is that right? Could you describe to me a little bit about what you did in cadet corps?
Well, it was really excellent training. We did a fair amount of rifle work out at the old Heels Range,
mm-hmm.
and from the time I was 13, we were firing on Heels Range.
Where is that?
That's just up. Just up towards the observatory, you know, the observatory out on the mountain, on the Saanich Peninsula.
Yeah.
It's still used by the military, that old Heels Range.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, at that time, the drills, it was really primarily First World War drilling that we did.
Mm-hmm.
And you were inspected by the district officer commanding the military district here in mm-hmm. British Columbia every year. And it was I was kind of lucky, I think, to have had the training, because when I joined up, I went almost directly. I was appointed by a unit at that time, the Irish Fusiliers, and sent immediately to Gordon Head to officers training.
Is that right?
Because I'd had that training at the school.
So you had 4 years of
I had 4 years of training. Cadet or military training there,
yeah.
And then I had when the war broke out, I was at university, and of course. I was into the COTC then, mm-hmm. the officers trained for there.
What type of equipment were you using?
At university school?
At university school, yeah.
Old World War I stuff. The rifles we used were the old Ross rifle, which was this great heavy brute, but a superb target rifle.
Mm-hmm.
Not, I gather, a particularly good rifle in action,
mm-hmm.
because it had a tendency to jam up a little,
mm-hmm. yeah.
but it was an excellent target rifle.
Is that right?
The rest of the equipment was World War I style putties and boots and that sort of thing,
mm-hmm,
really.
Mm-hmm. Was there any military background in your family?
No, actually. My father was in the States, of course, in World War I,
mm-hmm.
and he did join up, and in the United States he was a lieutenant in the infantry there, but he never got over
mm-hmm.
seas at all.
Mm-hmm. Now, after you went to university, now this is at, you did your COTC at university,
UBC, yeah.
UBC. Tell me a little bit about that particular time in your career.
As a COTC, I was there, I actually finished up before I joined up, I finished up as the regimental sergeant major for the
mm-hmm.
Corps.
Mm-hmm.
And we were camping at Nanaimo, at the Army camp in Nanaimo,
mm-hmm.
once your year session was over.
Mm-hmm.
We went up there to their camp. And I served under then Lieutenant Colonel Gordon Shrum,
mm-hmm.
who, as you know, has been, amongst other things, the Chancellor of of Simon Fraser and Lord knows what other jobs Gordon hasn't had in British Columbia over the years.
How is he as a military commander from your perspective?
Well, from my perspective, I know he would probably belt me right now for saying, but Colonel Shrum was never one to at any time, and still isn't, to ever give anybody any authority. I mean, he didn't delegate authority at all to anyone. And I had my disagreements with Dr. Shrum over the years, particularly at that time I did, but I count on him now as an old friend. I've known him for a long time, ever since I was at the university when he was there then. But, I did have some disagreements with him at the Nanaimo camp, and we I parted company with him there and joined up into the regular services from there.
Well, now, you started COTC in what year?
Oh, as soon as the war broke out, 1939, the first thing that happened was that the university said all the freshman class, freshman classes entering at that point would have to take, it would be compulsory for them to take Army physical training. Dr. Maury Van Vliet, who was on the campus then as the director of physical education, the two of us were sent down to Starkey Barracks in Calgary, and we did the summer Army PT school. And I came back, and while I was still an undergraduate, I was instructing Army PT at the University of British Columbia, along with Dr. Van Vliet. I had to do all of the freshman classes, without pay, I might add.
Is that right?
Yes.
Now, what unit was the COTC linked to?
They weren't really linked to the Officers Training Corps. Wasn't linked to a unit per se, but what they did was, of course, supply officers or men to go on training as officers to the camps after the war broke out to whatever units wanted you, really. And I was taken from there by the Irish Fusiliers, Vancouver, the Irish there, and sent to Gordon Head, then military camp, and then from there to Curry Barracks.
What do you remember about the Gordon Head camp?
The Gordon Head camp, I was marked, what they called Mark II. I was second class in to Gordon Head. And it was good training. They had a couple of excellent, permanent force instructors there. They had several good Major Faulkner, who was originally Royal Roads RSM, was the training officer there. And it was good training. For that time, I don't suppose we had, at that time, battle school tactics had not been decided. They were still looking at World War I style of fighting. And until Colonel Fred Scott, actually, who was the colonel, was the colonel of my regiment that I finally joined up with overseas, was the man who instigated what was known as battle drill training in the Canadian Army overseas. He came back and instructed it, set up the first battle schools out here.
How did the battle schools, I mean, what was the difference?
Well, the difference was primarily the idea of movement as opposed to a static type of trench warfare. Everything was move, everything. You attacking head-on was discouraged if it was possible to outflank an enemy position. This type of idea, I would say probably, I don't know, probably taken from the German Blitzkrieg idea of tactics.
Yeah. Now that would require a fair amount of, I would imagine, a mechanization, or am I wrong?
Yes, we didn't have it in the way that we had it when you eventually went into action.
Yeah.
I mean, we did not have the battle school was held up. Was operating out of Vernon at the on the Coldstream Ranch up the Lumbee Valley, and we didn't have tanks or artillery other than mortars, which we used, and it was all live ammunition training. That was the other difference.
Is that right?
Yeah. You didn't have, there was no mock, there was no blank cartridges being used. We used live ammunition, and consequently the training was fraught with a certain amount of danger, too. We did have, let me see, we only killed one man, I think, in the timer there, but it was pretty...
In training accidents with live ammunition, would the accidents be due to this, errors in aim, or would it be just somebody just went the wrong way and ran off?
Both things, really. We had some men wounded because we were, when you did an indoctrination to get men used to fire and explosions in and around and close to them.
Mm-hmm.
I recall we hit one boy in the heel. We were using Bren guns, firing behind them
mm-hmm.
as they crawled through the wire and so on. Just a little error in aiming there, that was.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And we killed one man because we were using half sticks of 808 dynamite in the river
mm-hmm.
and exploding them to simulate shell fire and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them unfortunately broke loose from its moorings and drifted down, and the guy was on top of it when it went off. So.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But
wow.
These things, it was remarkable, actually, I think. The lack of casualties.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The men who were doing the instructing were extremely well trained. When I went up on the school, I know what is it. When I went as a student, though, I stayed on and instructed for 11 months
mm-hmm.
there too as well.
Mm-hmm. Now let me just get this straight. This at what time were you sent up to Vernon?
I joined up on June the 10th in 1941. I was in my my third year then, and I went immediately to Gordon Head
mm-hmm.
officer's training. Did my officer's training and joined the Irish Fusiliers in Nanaimo. When I'd finished that, that would have been in 41, and would have been in the late fall of 41.
And what rank did you have?
I came on their staff as a second lieutenant, and I was sent from there in 42. Early
mm-hmm.
42, they started the battle schools. They started one in the original battle school that I went on was at Courtney.
Mm-hmm.
As a student, I went on that one at Courtney.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Just out of curiosity, what were you taking at university?
I was doing commerce
oh,
at that time.
Yeah.
Well, what business had been.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, what during your training, what kind of equipment was coming in that was new?
On the battle schools?
Yeah.
On the battle schools, the stem gun, which of course was we hadn't seen.
Mm-hmm.
We had the brands and the stem guns, and because some of our older training at the beginning, of course, was done with a Lewis gun,
mm-hmm.
the old World War One Lewis. We were reasonably well equipped. Actually, we had the 36 grenades. We had we didn't have the Piat there the. Projectile
mm-hmm.
infantry anti-tank up there, but we had the Bangalore torpedoes for going through wire and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
That was available to us, and we had Bren carriers and the usual vehicles,
mm-hmm.
but they were all with the exception of the Bren, I suppose you would categorize them as thin skin vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
The ones we did have, but the Brens we used, and we used them in lieu of tanks when we were,
mm-hmm.
and we did Bren gun. Tactics for the two.
Did you ever see a tank in Canada?
Oh, just trying to think. Don't think I ever did, actually. Now,
yeah.
Not while we were training in mm-hmm. Canada. I guess all that equipment went over. It was on its way out.
Because mm-hmm.
Really, because I was held on to instruct for 11 months, I didn't get overseas until 43.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about the Sten gun and the soldiers' opinions of that particular weapon.
The Sten, it was a, for what it was, in many ways, I think probably we started off with your old Tommy gun,
mm-hmm.
which was a 45, and certainly had the stopping power well and above anything else I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
But the Sten, it did its job. It was a dangerous weapon in some respects to operate because it had a very heavy hammer.
Mm-hmm.
And if the cocking handle even caught on something and just went a quarter of the way back and then released, it would fire.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I had one of my drivers overseas shoot himself in the armpit with one. Mm-hmm. He reached for it, we came under fire, and he jumped out of the Jeep and grabbed the muzzle of the stem and pulled it towards him, and it caught that cocking handle and got him right in the armpit.
Yes. What did the soldiers feel about those weapons? I mean, were they... sort of the equivalent of the
anything war. Like that, they at the beginning you sort of laughed at it because it looked like it had been, you know, rung up in the metal shop at the school. Mm-hmm. It was a real...
it's all stamped parts.
Yeah, just a real, it was a real weird-looking weapon, really.
Mm-hmm.
But anything that they could get automatic fire with and single, they liked.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, now getting back a little bit to your training, you mentioned that after your training, you became an instructor.
Yes.
And this was at Vernon?
Yes, it was.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about that part of your career.
Well, that was it was really a fascinating job because we were working then with men who had come back from the Calgary Highlanders.
Mm-hmm.
They had been sent back and, along with Colonel Scott. To set up these battle drill training centers, and it was a great experience. There were of course a very eager bunch of young men who were doing the instructing up there, and
mm-hmm.
Amongst other things, we had a lot of fun too.
Mm-hmm.
On that particular school, the colonel, who was somewhat eccentric, he could he cut red tape in all directions.
Mm-hmm.
He did not. I can recall him doing some of the things that I'm sure he would have been court-martialed for if he'd have been caught doing.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Now this is Colonel
Fred Scott from Calgary.
Yeah.
I believe the colonel is still alive. He fought all through World War I and was commanding officer of the Calgary Highlanders overseas, and was sent back primarily because I think he was overage, of course,
mm-hmm.
and but he also had. Had initiated this battle drill training within the unit in Britain, and if I'm not mistaken, the Calgary Highlanders were the first unit
mm-hmm.
to go into this battle training drill
training. Is that right?
in any way, shape, or form in England.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you say you had fun, was that in terms of the social life and the
both?
Yeah,
both. We. I had done over the years. I'd been involved pretty heavily in all forms of athletics
mm-hmm.
and sport, and I can't ever recall ever being in the kind of superb physical condition I was in when we were there,
mm-hmm.
because we were working in over those hills out of Vernon up on the Coldstream
yeah,
Ranch at
yeah.
temperatures that would hit about 115 in the sun up in on those hills,
yeah.
and we were running because everything was done on the run. When they moved off to attack, they ran.
Is that right?
And
this is the battle of
every,
yeah.
yeah. And I would think we were doing maybe 10 to 12 miles a day of this sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And just an unbelievable physical condition, which meant, of course, that you could also party most
yeah.
of the night.
yeah.
Yeah. And get going the next day. It took only the first couple of miles, and you were back in shape again.
Mm-hmm. How long would individual, say, Soldier A, be in that particular training for the battle?
7-week course, it was.
Yeah. And would it be all out in the mountains or in doing pilot formations?
That was primarily a very practical course. There were lectures each day,
mm-hmm.
but they didn't last very long.
Mm-hmm.
And we would do a recap of whatever was done right on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Once
mm-hmm.
we'd made the attack, and let's say student A takes over as commanding this platoon or a company or whatever,
mm-hmm.
and we give him what he's supposed to do or where he's supposed to go and what he's supposed to do getting there, and he does it.
Mm-hmm.
Then we sit down and talk about the mistakes that might have been made or
mm-hmm.
or the good points of the exercise, and with all everybody there and everybody able to put their two bits worth in and
mm-hmm.
discuss it. And along with the live ammunition part of the training, if nothing else, it got men to lose at least some of the fear of noise and confusion
mm-hmm.
that always occurs in any
mm-hmm.
in any battle situation.
Mm-hmm.
And we created a great deal of confusion. We yelled at them, we swore at them, we while they were going through their whatever particular attack, let's say they were making, we really went after them and tried to confuse them as much as possible and brought down fire on them and all sorts of things like that. Which there's nothing that I don't suppose you can do to really train a man to know what it's going to be when they're shooting at you for real. But it most certainly it certainly was a help, and I thought of an excellent training situation.
So you would say that training, as far as close as you can get to battle conditions, that prepared the men as best as.
I think it saved a lot of lives.
Yeah, is that right?
Oh yeah.
And now, what would be the largest formation that you'd be doing?
On that battle school, on the Canadian one where we were, we operated only up to a company level. When we got to England. All of us, a great number of the instructors went out all at the same time and were shipped off to England. And the first thing that happened to us is that we were sent on a battle school as students in England to the Canadian battle school at Findon Manor in southern England. And we went there. We were going into a much larger formation. We went to battalion formation and with support and weapons like tanks and artillery.
What were the conditions like at the at Vernon?
Living conditions?
Yeah.
We were partially under canvas. We'd taken over the ranch buildings on the Coldstream Ranch, which at that time was, I think, the largest fruit ranch in North America.
Is that right?
Yeah. The ranch itself probably comprised 150,000 acres, and they were raising cattle. Apples had their own big packing plant right on the ranch. And they're raising cattle and doing some experimental work with crops as well there, but they gave us the run of the camp. It covered right down to Kalamalka Lake from the ranch, which was a long way.
What would have been the relations between the community of Vernon and
the battle school? Don't forget there were two camps.
Yeah,
ours was outside there, and then there was a brigade camp. There was a brigade up under Brigadier Shorty Cahoon, up in the Vernon, present Vernon campsite, still there. Our relationships with Brigadier Cahoon were less than cordial.
Why is that?
Well, primarily because he really had no control over us. We were operating directly under CMHQ in Ottawa. A special training group, and the brigadier was not happy about this because he felt we were not really quite military enough, I don't suppose. Well, that was one of the things about the battle drill school. There was we had dispensed with saluting and all this sort of thing, primarily because our instructors, a number of them were senior NCOs, and we were living together and working together under fairly rugged conditions all the time. So consequently, we dropped a number of the military formalities, which Brigadier Cahoon took a very dim view of, particularly when they went into town. And so we had troubles that way. But I think the most amusing thing, as I say, Fred Scott, our colonel, was a bit of an eccentric. And Brigadier Cahoon had come out to our place, one had been invited out to a mess dinner, and he had been boasting to Colonel Scott that he had the finest defense platoon in Canada. There's no question about it. This was a platoon that were made up to guard his brigade headquarters within the camp. And Scott awakened us, five of us, one night at about 4 a.m. His batman came and woke us up, and we all assembled in his bedroom, and he was sitting there in his bathrobe, and he said, "Gentlemen, there is the brigadier is telling me he has a superb defense platoon. Now, I want you to go into the stores and draw German uniforms," which we had up there for demonstration purposes.
Yeah.
And he said, "I want you to penetrate the brigade."
Wouldn't that be a little dangerous?
It certainly was. Also, it was extremely dangerous from the point of view that if we got caught, he didn't even know who we were. He was not going to admit that we even belonged to him. So we did. We took off at about 4 a.m. in these German uniforms and got into the camp, there was no problem. It was a big camp. And however, we did get fouled up momentarily in the transport lines because they had some sentries in there that were moving around. And I know they were all, though they were a long way away from action, I know that they were all well armed and they had loaded rifles. And they, so we were forced to take one of them, which we did.
Now what?
We knocked him out.
Physically knocked
yes,
him?
We knocked him out and rolled him up in a truck tarp and stuffed him in the back of a truck so he was nice and quiet. And we actually entered Brigadier Cahoon's caravan. He had a caravan up there that he lived in. And I worried about it because Shorty was the kind of a man I assumed had slept with a loaded 45 under his pillow. However, we left a 36 grenade on his pillow with a little note on it. We had defused the grenade, but we little note to say that we had arrived, and we walked out of the main gate of that camp and got a salute from the sentry on the gate, and we were in German uniforms. Well, this caused a tremendous kerfuffle up there. The brigadier, there were three battalions, and every night, one whole battalion, that was right down to the last cook and everybody else, including all the officers, were on guard duty. One in three nights they had to do a guard, which meant they weren't too happy with us either, because that didn't go down too well. However, that was some of the crazy things that happened up there.
Now, just out of curiosity, the fellow that you knocked over the head or whatever and rolled him up, did you let on that you were Canadians and you just were, this was an
he didn't even know he was hit. We got him. And that was it.
Gosh.
They didn't find him until the next morning, I don't think.
Good,
probably when they changed the guard, I don't know. We never asked about it, but we had several brushes with Shorty and his group. While we were there, they had a bond rally in Vernon, and we decided we would liven this bond rally up and let them know what it was like. We got into the German uniforms and we put old coveralls, army coveralls, over them so they wouldn't. We could get into town without being spotted. And we decided that what we would do is we'd take the brigadier prisoner while he was making his speech to the assembled multitude, you see. And Shorty got word of somehow that there was something going to happen. He wasn't sure what it was. So anyhow, he had his defense platoon out again, around in the buildings, all around him. It was a regular, he had a real security thing going. Well, we were in these overalls, and we had them spotted before we were in town for 15 minutes. We knew where every one of these guys were. And so we proceeded to take them all, and a nice consolidated attack. And it got a little rough because these guys got very upset, and they began to go for it for real.
Yeah.
And it turned into quite a Donnybrook. I had the pleasure of actually taking the brigadier, and when he had heard that something was going to happen, Shorty Cahoon was 6'6". Or thereabouts,
mm-hmm.
And he had one other officer in a battalion who was about the same height. Well, Shorty stepped off of the platform, slipped an old trench coat and a pair of dark glasses on, and this other fellow went up on the platform as his double.
Uh-huh.
And we watched this happen. I was standing in the ground right there, and I had at that time a Tommy gun tucked under my clothes, and I pulled this out and put it into his stomach and said, "Come with me, sir. You are now a prisoner." And it's a wonder. I don't know why we weren't. He would have dearly loved to have court-martialed the whole bunch of us, but he couldn't do it because the people were getting such a big bang out of the whole
mm-hmm.
thing. However, I think he forgave us later.
Mm-hmm. Now, what was the official title of the training unit you were with?
That was the battle school.
Yeah.
Canadian Army Battle Drill Training Center, yeah. I think that was it.
So you're attached with, you're not attached with any particular regiment?
No,
this time.
The people we had, the training officers, a reasonable number of them were Calgary Hounders,
mm-hmm.
but we had Regiment de Maisonneuve. Gary Clerk was from the Regiment de Maisonneuve. We had some from Lincoln and Welland, I believe there were a couple of them. There were from officers mm-hmm. from all over Canada, some of them who we had kept on, who had gone through a course, and we
mm-hmm.
decided that they would make excellent officers, training officers,
mm-hmm.
and we kept them on.
Did you have any British officers coming over? I'm just wondering where, obviously, some of you found out that the Germans used the same type of tactics, the Blitzkrieg tactics, and using British officers who had experience it in Africa?
No, we didn't have any British officers. They sent up, surprisingly enough, they sent up an American colonel from Montana to have a look at our training, because he wanted to institute some similar form of training for their units that were training in Montana, I presume. Mm-hmm. But that was the only visiting officers, per se, we had, other than we ran a senior officer school ourselves, mm-hmm. Which was fascinating because we had three Victoria Crosses in the mess at one time.
Okay.
Well, General Perks, Brigadier Gregg from Nova Scotia, and old Jock McGregor from here, who was mm-hmm. The junior of those, of the three of them, he was Lieutenant Colonel.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Canadian Scottish mm-hmm. Regiment officer.
What do you remember about Perks?
Finest gentleman I ever had the pleasure of serving under.
Is that right?
Yes, he was. Mm-hmm. He was extremely good. He was a tough, no-nonsense man,
mm-hmm.
Just a marvelous, marvelous man, I thought, anyhow. Mm-hmm. I have great respect for the general.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, this training of that you're doing, you said you were there for 11 months.
About 11 months, yeah.
And you were just rotated out of there or transferred out? Or?
Well, they were going to, as I remember, they were going to disband the school.
Mm-hmm.
And when we heard this, most of us then said, okay, well, to the colonel, would you get us a transfer? And I asked Colonel Scott, because I was a Calgary boy anyhow,
mm-hmm.
I asked the colonel if he could arrange to have me taken off the strength of the Irish Fusiliers and could I join the regiment in England,
mm-hmm.
which I did,
mm-hmm.
and he allowed me to, he arranged it.
Mm-hmm. And you were a second lieutenant all the way to the
training? No, I was a captain then.
Oh, I see.
On the battle school, but I reverted to lieutenant to go overseas.
Oh, I see. Yeah. So you met up with the Calgary Highlanders in
England, yes. I first went, everybody was sent to Aldershot first, mm-hmm. didn't matter what you did.
Yeah.
And Aldershot and to a battle school, and from the battle school I went to the regiment, mm-hmm. then, directly from there.
Well, moving back a little bit, tell me the course of events between, say, from Vernon to Aldershot. Obviously, you went
straight,
by train to...
Straight to Halifax, on board the New Mauritania,
mm-hmm.
and landing in Liverpool and mm-hmm. right to Aldershot Barracks.
What do you remember about the ship, the crossing of the Atlantic?
It was rough.
Mm-hmm.
We were unescorted. Of course, the ship was unescorted. Mm-hmm. She was fast enough.
What time of year was that?
That would have been November of 43.
43, yeah. So you're, now this is with the...
Well, everybody. There was just no end of different varieties of people. There were women Air Force and CWAC and mm-hmm. Air Force personnel and Army personnel and everybody on board that
mm-hmm.
ship.
Mm-hmm.
And when they got there, of course, they went dispatched off to their various and sundry units or wherever they were going.
So it was a rough crossing and
It was a fairly rough crossing, yeah. Not nearly as rough as the one we came back on, but it was rough. The weather was grim.
How long did it take?
Not very long. I think we were at sea about 6.5 days or less, and then, you know, they really moved it. Mind you, we were zigzagging all over the North Atlantic going.
Mm-hmm.
But,
mm-hmm. Did you ever see any sign of that?
No. We had the, the name of the aircraft, the Catalinas.
Yeah.
We met Catalinas out almost 2 days out at sea, you know.
Is that right?
You know?
Yeah, going out that far.
They went out a long way just to check.
Yeah, yeah. So you arrive in Scotland, or
no? We landed in Liverpool.
Liverpool, and then the train down to Aldershot. And
train down to Aldershot, into the old Aldershot barracks, in the middle of, you know, close to December,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and it was cold.
Is that right? No. It couldn't have been any colder than an average winter in Vernon. Were you just not equipped with the proper...
Oh, we were equipped. That was all right, but Aldershot barracks had to be seen to be appreciated.
They were from Crimean War.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They went back good. I was in Melplaki barracks, and it was... your officer's room had a little fireplace, less than the width of two of those doors there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
that all the heat went up the chimney. You didn't get any heat in the building. And you were allowed one bucket of coal per man per day to stay warm. And that was the only heating there was in the place.
Yeah.
So you hit the sack with as many blankets as you could steal and your uniform and everything else but your boots on.
Yeah, yeah. What do you remember about, what were your first impressions of Great Britain, of wartime Great Britain?
Well, I guess I was fascinated with Great Britain anyhow.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me that, you know, as a schoolboy and everything else, I'd read a lot about Britain I guess the first thing we noticed was the dullness of the countryside, and we hit it at a bad time in the winter, which made it even worse, but the lack of food that you'd normally see, of course, was the first thing that we saw.
Because you got into the powdered egg sort of...
immediately. You realized that rationing was for real. There was no fooling around about their rationing. And then you realized what a remarkable group of people they were. You really heard very little belly aching about conditions.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody was just in there plugging away and doing their best they could. And I was also surprised at the warmth of our welcome by the British.
And do you remember any particular instances of examples of the welcome that was given to Canadian soldiers?
Oh yeah, they would when you went down to London on leave, or if you got down to London, there were a group of ladies, most of them titled ladies, who would hold a tea dance or something on the Saturday or the Sunday for troops of all ranks. Didn't matter what rank you were or anything else. And as you got to, particularly, not so much out of Aldershot, but once you got to your units, wherever the units were posted or were billeted or wherever they were camped, the locals were really terribly friendly to you. But they were very, very friendly. And when you think that island, about the, you know, we used to say the only thing that was holding the island up were the barrage balloons.
Yeah.
Because the, you know, there were millions of more people suddenly landed in their lap with rationing. Admittedly, the troops got parcels. And they shared those parcels with friends they made in the in the villages and the towns in England. But they were, it was just in retrospect, looking back on it, it was really a remarkable feat of courage, I thought.
What was your first thing that you saw, say, damage of war, apart from the rationing? That was obviously there was something going on, but as far as the actual indications of
war?
Yeah.
I suppose really the first thing we saw, because we had no problems at Aldershot, the first thing we saw was when we went down to London on leave. And you saw the effect of the bombing around St. Paul's and in that area in particular. Then you realized what was going on. And not right then, but if you experience an air attack, the first one we actually had, I'm sure they dumped them just on their way out. We were doing a night exercise in a battle school on when this, and we just immediately got over there. And we were up on the South Downs, and we were firing flares, of course, and I suppose the German bombers spotted the flare, so they unloaded all whatever they had there on us. We were, fortunately, we were out in the middle of nowhere, and nobody got hit. But that was it. We knew it then, and we also, my regiment were in Folkestone before we went over to the continent. We encountered the first V-1s going across on their way up. As a matter of fact, they hit one over Folkestone. The ACAC battery on Dover, heavy battery, lowered the boom on one, and they were only flying at about 800 to 1,000 feet.
Was that right? I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah, they were very low. And boy, I'll tell you, the buildings moved back. It exploded over Folkestone. It was a tremendous explosion.
Is that right?
But, yes, at Folkestone we had both. We had the V-1s and we had the heavy guns from Calais that used to, huge guns.
How accurate, now I guess we're moving ahead a little bit, but just how accurate were those guns?
The big guns?
Yeah.
Well, it was a place called Shell Alley in Folkestone. Mm-hmm. That's what we call. We used to use it as a training area in the daytime for house to house fighting because it had been shelled so often. There wasn't much. There was nobody in there, and I only saw them in the daytime once firing. Mm-hmm. We were actually down at the harbor, and there was a ship going up channel, or not very, and hugging the English coast, and I guess the Germans decided to take a whack at it. And the first one was short, the second one was long, and the third one lit in the harbor, and that's when we moved off at speed because that was a huge shell.
Would you hear them coming?
Oh, yeah.
You would hear the bang.
You could hear them.
Well,
you could actually see the flash on a good day.
Is that right?
Because they weren't that far. It was 21
yeah,
miles.
Yeah. Now, from Aldershot, how long were you in Aldershot for?
I was in Aldershot arriving in, on, say, the 1st of December, and then we went on to the battle school, and we finished the battle school sometime around the end of February. Mm-hmm. And I went straight from there to the Calgary Highlanders. Mm-hmm.
What were the differences between the Canadian and the British version?
Of the battle schools?
Yeah.
I didn't do a British battle school. This was a Canadian school being run. The British battle school was at Barnes Castle up in Yorkshire. And I know Canadians who went on it, who said it was the toughest school they'd ever been on in their lives. Barnes Castle was a very, very rugged one. They were doing a lot of commando training and this sort of thing.
Well, change the question around. No. What was the difference between the Canadian, the battle school that was in Vernon, and the one that was in England, if any?
Only the size of the units that or the type of tactics you're doing, which you're moving up. We went as far as company, they went into battalion, and with supporting weapons, which we didn't have. That was probably the main difference.
So you were at the battle school there for about, this is another 7 weeks?
Again,
week
another 7 week course, 7-8 weeks.
So that would take you into early 44?
Yes, we were. I was. That was into about February. Went down to the unit then, and at that particular time we were in Brighton. The unit was stationed in Brighton, or in the area of Brighton, and training. We were doing. We were then training. Montgomery was still. We had not the really big schemes like Spartan and those that he did with the Canadian Army, but there were the. We were doing. Constant training with.
Did you? At what point did you start, or did you start training for sea assault?
We did a. We were not. There was no question about. We knew we weren't. We weren't going to be doing the. The second division was not going to be. It was going to be third division that we're going to do the landings. We were practicing river crossings. Using the mouth of the Thames. Which was something else, because when the tide went out, most of the times you were up your hips in mud. So it was, that was some of the type of training. I suppose you could say we're, up until we went off, we were refining the training we'd already had, trying to just work out little refinements in the training.
Now what was your actual role, job? And what were you actually doing?
In the unit?
In the unit, yeah.
Well, when I first went, I was platoon commander.
Of what? Of what?
In D Company. I had D Company, one of the D Company platoons, and that's what I went over with that. And when I was when we landed in France, I was switched over to support company, the carrier platoon. And
I see. How early did you know, or you mentioned that you knew that you wouldn't be carrying out the BC invasion and
well, we knew, most of us knew that 3 Division were doing most of the assault training, beach landings. We had some of that training, everybody did, but it was obvious that the 3 Div were getting the that role because they were just constantly on that type of training.
Because they were training, some of them were down in Isle of Wight area.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I guess you knew that you'd be doing the follow-up.
We knew we were going to do the follow-up. We didn't know when, of course, until almost... it was interesting because we... the security was really something that was... I guess it was in late April or 1st of May. I can't remember really the date, but two of us, my oldest friend and I, were got leave. Mm-hmm. We were given leave to go up to London for 5 days or whatever it was. And we, as we walked in, we had to let people, you let the orderly room know where you were going to be in London. As we walked in, the desk clerk said, we have a telephone call for you. And it was the colonel, and we were to return immediately, so we didn't get any leave. Mm-hmm. And from that point on, the battalion and all of us were sealed in. Mm-hmm. Absolutely sealed in. I mean, nobody could come in or out mm-hmm. of the area.
Mm-hmm. And that was, so you, what would you have done in there? I mean, you couldn't have...
Trained.
Yeah. When you say area, how much? How
oh, well, of course, you had a training area. We were outside of that. But at night, there was no town leave. There was no going into the mm-hmm. village pub or anything like mm-hmm. that. And no way. Mm-hmm. We were just suddenly cut off.
What do you remember in the period when you could go out about the build-up of equipment in southern England? You know, the reaction to it.
You'd see it everywhere.
Yeah.
Just unbelievable that nobody was... Well, I'm sure that the Germans must have seen the build-up. They must have had reconnaissance photographs mm-hmm. of that build-up. Mm-hmm. It was hidden. There was a lot of it was pretty well camouflaged down the roads. There would be miles of vehicles, you know, mm-hmm. parked down little country roads and reasonably well camouflaged mm-hmm. with netting and so on.
I suppose even if they did know it was there, they wouldn't know where it was going.
Well,
that
was... and in the south, of course, they were... there had been so much propaganda and thrown at them that it was obvious that Calais was going to be the short point to go across, mm-hmm. so that was sort of the obvious attack area.
Mm-hmm.
And in the meantime, they, of course, changed it to the Normandy beachheads.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, what do you remember about the actual invasion? Now, you didn't take part in it, but what were you doing at that time?
We were locked in.
Mm-hmm.
We knew on the 6th
mm-hmm.
that they'd gone.
Mm-hmm.
Because on the night of this, you know, the 5th, that night, I don't think I've ever heard as many aircraft going out in my life as
that right?
I know.
Mm-hmm.
Just this constant drone of heavy bombers going out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the next morning we got the word. But,
mm-hmm.
And we were tied in for a month, you see. We didn't land till D-30,
mm-hmm.
July 6th.
Mm-hmm. So in the meantime, you're training?
Still training, young.
Yeah.
Trying to keep the... It was a little simpler then because they were sure then
mm-hmm.
that there was you know we'd been going for it just seemed like ages. Hurry up and wait routine
mm-hmm.
during the training in England and particularly for the men who'd been there for years.